You're going to be hearing quite a bit of this guy between now and the end of this year. He's made his trek down to Port St. Lucie. He's all nestled up in his hotel room, and he's ready to see DeGrom and Syndergaard and Wheeler and all the boys spitting sunflower seeds, doing their PFPs, and getting ready for the start of the 2019 season. He's our Met correspondent. He's one of the best. Check him out in the record. Our good pal, Matty Ehalt, is going to join us to talk some Met baseball. What's happening, Matty boy?
I'm here. I'm in Port St. Lucie, home of the restaurants and not much nightlife.
There you go, Matty boy. You're a trooper. That's why we love you. And, of course, we appreciate a couple of minutes. Let's start here with the idea of the start of spring training. As a guy who does this day in and day out, as a guy who's around the team day in and day out, do you get the juices flowing at all for the start of spring training, or is it kind of this dread, this doom and gloom, knowing that we're still, what, about 6-7 weeks away from the start of the season?
So it's interesting. You know, I always have this conversation with people because a lot of people, I think, have a different view of what spring training is. And like, I from the outside, at least, it seems a lot of fans, and to be honest, this is not anything saying because how would they know better? They kind of look at spring training, like you said, it's a very wide open thing. Spring training is basically, it's funny because the baseball season is night games all the time. Spring training is 6 weeks of waking up at 8 a.m. for 8 a.m. workouts until like 2 p.m. It's the complete opposite of the regular season. It's really odd how different it is compared to the rest of the thing. But, you know, certainly when you get going at the beginning, there's certainly some excitement in the air. You get the guys there. Everybody's optimistic. I mean, you know, you're going to read some tweets very soon about how so-and-so's in the best shape of his life. So-and-so's ready to rebound. This guy's primed for a breakout year. You know, everybody's optimistic. It's basically the 6 weeks of the season where, you know, anybody with any team can kind of look and be like, hey, I think my team has a chance this year. So, you know, there's always a certain reason. It's really, like I said, the one time where at least, you know, before the Family Guy clip where, you know, any fan of any team can kind of be like, well, I think we got a shot this year.
Matt, let's get to that pitching staff. I'm going to look at DeGrom as an obvious given. He was the best pitcher in baseball last year. Let's leave Syndergaard out of this for a minute. Wheeler, as dominant as he was from June and beyond, knowing that he's going into a contract year where he's going to want to get paid in the offseason, do you believe that for a full year now, we are ready to say that Zach Wheeler has turned the corner and should no longer be in the category of, dare I say, question marks, but should move into that category of being more of a given?
You know, it's interesting because that's a fantastic question because, you know, that's going to be one of the things with Wheeler this year. Like you said, was last year, was that a hot stretch or was that legit? I tend to think that is legit. I think that is, we saw, I think last year, what Wheeler can be when he's healthy, when he's out there, when he's producing, when he's confident. I mean, a lot of people will tell you that a lot of the stuff with Zach is, you know, when he has his confidence going, that allows him to, you know, kind of pitch like he did. But at the same time, like you said, how many times have you seen guys where they, you know, they have a strong finish or something and then it doesn't translate? So, I mean, in a lot of ways, the Mets, you know, the Mets do not have great pitching depth at the moment. For as good as their top four is, the Mets really, if they suffer one or two injuries, they are going to be in a tough position with their rotation. So they really need Wheeler to pitch like he did last year. I mean, they really don't have much, you know, margin for error, especially because, you know, while, you know, Steven Matz last year made all his starts, I think there are some question marks at this point about, you know, is Steven Matz that frontline guy that people thought he was going to be? Is he more of a backline guy now or back-end guy? Now, the thing with the Mets is you can be a back-end guy with the top guys they have, but I do think there is some questions about, you know, where kind of Matz stands in that. So, you know, but if the Mets don't get what they expect out of Wheeler, it's hard to see them being able to compete, you know, with some of the other teams in the division.
Totally agree. I think he's a big key to 2019. Now, if you look at Steven Matz came on the scene and he had all this stuff and he's left-handed, he's a local kid, and everybody was thinking the sky's the limit. And you know what, Matt, to your point, made all of his starts last year and was, for the most part, pretty mediocre. I know he pitched better down the stretch, finished with a sub-4 ERA, but if you watch the games, game after game after game, it was the roller coaster with Steven Matz. Year before, he was terrible. What, in your eyes, what, in your opinion, are realistic expectations for Steven Matz going into 2019?
I think if he could give them about 20 to 25 starts of 3.5 to 4.0 ERA ball, I think that's a good I think that's a good one for, or a fair guess for Steven Matz. I mean, you know, you look last year, he finished with a 3.97. So how many starts did he make last year? He made 30 starts. So if you get close to that number, about 4 ERA ball, I think that's a fair estimate. But, you know, again, but so much that though is dependent, that those numbers are okay if Wheeler's producing like he did last year. I mean, you know, the Mets, you know, they really, it'll be interesting to see how the rotation does. You know, especially, you know, it'll be interesting to see this upcoming season. How does, you know, Syndergaard handle, even DeGrom? You know, hey, how is DeGrom going to, you know, bounce back the next year? And, you know, one thing with DeGrom right now is he does not have a contract extension. And, you know, that stuff can linger. That's not something that you just bat your eyes at and say, like, oh, you know, every day the Mets don't sign him, he's closer to becoming a free agent.
Matty, you have a problem with the Mets not giving DeGrom a contract extension this offseason? He's got 2 more years of team control. Obviously, we know how great he is. Is that something that would be atop your priority list if you were running the team?
The DeGrom contract extension is a very interesting thing because I think there's several arguments to be made on both sides. The first argument I think you can look at is just say, hey, this guy right now is the face of the franchise. He's your best pitcher. He's one of the best pitchers in all of baseball. One, from a PR perspective, it is a good move. I would say that 98% of the Mets fans I see online want to sign him to an extension. Secondly, it resonates in the clubhouse that it says, hey, you take care of your own guys. Because let's be honest, with the Mets, there's always the concern they're going to lose guys. And then you look at it from the perspective of, hey, this guy helps you win. Whether or not, you know, forget about when he might start declining, et cetera. This guy is going to help you win. The flip side of that is when DeGrom's contract is up, he is a 32-year-old. If you look around the market this year, older guys are not getting paid. So you can look at it from the perspective of probably the baseball analytics side would say, hey, it might not be the best investment to give a guy $25 to $30 million when he's 32 years old. So I think there is a lot of factors involved in here in the decision. But certainly the Mets have made it known that they want to extend him, they want to keep him. But again, you know, actions ultimately speak louder than words. And I mean, hey, DeGrom has said he'd like to stay, but, you know, they do need to compensate the guy. I mean, that's kind of the one thing that overshadows all this is, like, you know, it's one thing to say, hey, you want to extend the guy. It's another to say, hey, we're going to extend you, but we're going to give you what you're worth. Because, I mean, let's be honest, DeGrom has been criminally underpaid throughout his career. And if we're just talking strictly in terms of does this guy deserve or not, he 100% deserves a contract extension. It's not even a question.
Spend a couple minutes with my man, Matt Ehall. Check him out each and every day covering the New York Mets in the Record. Matt, do you get the sense between now and opening day the Mets will be in the market for, dare I say, adding another starting pitcher? That going to happen?
I think they're keeping tabs on things. That's at least, I mean, what I've been told is they're keeping tabs. I mean, I think it's tough to say because I think ultimately it's going to be what are guys willing to settle for, because the Mets have an interesting situation where they don't have a rotation spot up for grabs because of Vargas. But you could also say, well, if you're a team that's playing to win now, you should bring in competition for Vargas. I personally think the Mets should go out and get somebody else. I don't trust the depth they have. Hector Santiago has really not been good in a few years. Walter Lockett, I know very little about. Corey Oswalt splashed at times last year, but he's completely unproven. So I really think the Mets, I think they should keep an eye on guys. But again, if you're a free agent out there and the Mets are not guaranteeing a spot, are you going to come just to battle Vargas when, you know, Vargas is the guy getting $9 million and you might be the, you know, the guy getting $1 million to come in or a minor league deal? So, you know, I do think, you know, I thought Josh Tomlin might have been a fit with them just because of his relationship with Mickey, but I do think the Mets, you know, one fascinating thing with the Mets is it's only 2 years ago where I believe it was the four of their starters combined for about 70 starts. This past year, I forget exact how much, it was about between 100 to 110. I don't think anyone can actually give you a prediction on how many starts the Mets guys are going to make this year because you can't tell due to their injury history. I mean, if you tell me they're going to do 110,
I could say, okay, like last year. If you told me the Mets guys are only going to make 70 this year, I mean, I can't say no because, you know, that's what's happened in the past.
Matty, moving over to position players, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. Does Conforto, in your eyes, have to be the glue guy? Does he have to be the guy from basically game one through game 162 that's going to be the best hitter in this lineup to emerge, to be one of those young, in their prime type of players? There's going to be a big season out at Citi Field. The way I see it, I mean, Cano's 35, 36 years old. I think he'll perform. Is he going to be Robbie Cano in his prime? Probably not. Ramos, Lowry, these aging players, these older players, I like them, but I look at Conforto. Around baseball, everybody's got a young guy. Everybody in the sport that's playing at a high level has at least one or two, or dare I say three guys, who are young, who are in their prime, who are at the top of their game. Is Conforto the biggest key for the Mets offensively to have a big season?
I agree with that, because I think in a lot of ways, like you said, I mean, the Mets have made some nice offseason additions bringing those guys in, but they're older guys. I mean, Ramos has an injury history. I mean, it's fair to wonder with Lowry how long, you know, his age, is he going to keep it up? I mean, I still think Cano has years left in him, but as a 36-year-old, guys have lost it at 36. I'm not saying that's going to happen at Cano, but you can't just discount the fact that, hey, there's some guys who at 36, they fall over the cliff. They just stop hitting. So I think Conforto does, and I especially think, too, because you look at it, like, I think Nimmo is legit. Nimmo has to go out and prove it in year two that he can go do it. They need Rosario to show that he can go out there and perform. And I also think in some ways, I think the book is still out on Michael Conforto, because, I mean, I think he's a talented player. I mean, hey, let's remember, I think it was on this show a few years ago, I said I would take him over Aaron Judge.
You want that one back, Matty.
I want many back.
Don't you worry, Matty. I had Chad Henne as a solid quarterback for the Miami Dolphins. So, you know, if you go down the road of bad predictions, you can find plenty, including a couple of mine. Just saying.
Well, like I said, I had all my prop bets on the Saints winning the Super Bowl this year. So that tells you all my gambling expertise. But, I mean, look at Conforto's career, right? He comes in 2015. Fantastic. 2016 starts hot, finishes, you know, he does not finish the season very well. Then you go into 2017. I'm just pulling up the stats here. 2017, 939 OPS. He was really damn good. Then 2018 was slow. Then he started hitting when he was healthy. So I still think you're waiting to see it from Conforto, and I think it's there. I think he's a fantastic player. I think he's going to show it this season. But if you kind of look at his career, it has been up, down, up, down. So, I mean, I think in some ways this is not only for, hey, for the Mets to be good, but I also think this is something for, you know, Conforto to finally, you know, put together back-to-back really good seasons.
Matty Hall to the record. Matty, I know these rule changes are not going to be implemented that the Players Association and baseball were kicking around, but my goodness, wouldn't the Mets be a nice fit for a DH considering Cano, Cespedes next year? If I'm the Mets, I'm saying, man, maybe we should rush these rules into place as soon as humanly possible.
Yeah, yeah. The Mets are a better team where they would benefit from the DH. I mean, they got a lot of kind of older, slower guys in their roster. Yeah, they certainly would. And I mean, personally, I just think it's time. I'm not, you know, I know there's the NL purist out there. But watching a pitcher bat does nothing for the sport. Go out and get real hitters. I'd rather see, you know, I do think Verlander's point the other day, I thought was very interesting that, you know, in the sport, we like to compare guys, and I mean, in fairness, it is tough to compare American League to NL pitchers because you're facing worse lineups. I mean, you're just not, when you're in the NL, you know, how many at-bats do you get against the pitcher every year? I mean, you know, the opposing pitcher, if you make 30 starts, what is that, 60 to 70 times you're facing an automatic out? I mean, you know, I'd have to go back this year. I mean, I can't imagine pitchers, maybe outside of Bumgarner or somebody, had more than one or two hits against the Grom. So basically, instead of a DH, you have a pitcher who goes 1 for 70 against the Grom. I mean, that's going to, you know, that type of stuff matters. And in no, I'm just using that as an example of saying, hey, you face the pitcher and, you know, you get to face him 70 times. So, I mean, it's certainly something that I think, you know, I just think it's time. I mean, I think that the two leagues need to, you know, just find something. Although certainly at this point, it does seem they might just wait until the next CBA.
Matty, amen to that. And before we get you out of here, final one for me, and this is probably the question you're sick and tired of answering. It's a question I'm sick and tired of throwing out on the air. Who the hell is going to sign first? Is it going to be Bryce Harper, Manny Machado? I mean, how long is this going to continue? That's one. I mean, I'm sick and tired of trying to figure that out. Two, who's signing first, Harper or Machado? Like, when in the world is this going to happen, my man?
I think it's going to be Machado first because there seems to be more out there in terms of what's available to him. I mean, we're starting to hear some, hey, he's got offer A, offer B on the table. I think probably Machado is going to sign. Also, I mean, one thing to keep a note is, you know, Boris is a guy. He's had guys stay, you know, who have signed late. I mean, I think it would be an embarrassment for baseball if their, you know, their most marketable player, you know, did not sign. But I mean, the you know, Boris has had guys wait before signing. You know, I mean, but it is just at this point, it really is getting ridiculous. I mean, it's, you know, with these guys where it's just like nobody wants to, you know, give any of these guys offers or not offers, but nobody really just wants to, you know, pay any of them where it's just like, I mean, this is not good. I mean, I try to think of in like NFL free agency this year, if like, and granted, I know one player in NFL, the quarterback, but like, I would love to see in the NFL if like Aaron Rodgers became a free agent and all we heard all offseason was why he's like overrated and why, you know, no team wants to give him $30 million a year, knowing that he could help you win a World Series or a Super Bowl, and just hearing the teams go like, you know what, Rodgers, he spends a little too much time freelancing back there. We just don't like it. His metrics, you know, what other sports? Seriously, this summer, the NBA, they have how many elite free agents? Are we going to hear 5 weeks of why Kyrie Irving is not worth $32 million? No, he's going to get signed within 3 minutes. But yet in baseball, you hear it all offseason. It's just, you basically just hear why these guys, according to, you know, certain teams, stink. Or not stink, but you know what I mean, why they're not worth the money.
Amen, bringing the fire as always. Matty Hall to the record. Matty, enjoy your time down in Port St. Lucie. And when you get a chance to run into Eddie Coleman, make sure there's a beverage waiting for him at a bar somewhere. Wherever you can find one, make sure that there's a beverage waiting for Eddie C and that it's on me, okay?
Okay, I'll tell them. I mean, I don't know how much, but then again, I don't know down here how much your word, you know, the Port St. Lucie bartenders, they might not.
No. I'm asking you to take care of it. I'll Venmo you. I'll take care of it. Don't worry. It's on me. I just want you to know that drink for Eddie C is on me.
I will tell him. He sit next to him in the cubicle inside Port St. Lucie. He'll be happy to hear that.
There we go. All right, Matty. Enjoy it, bro. We'll chat soon.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Good stuff from the great Matt Ehalt. And Ehalt spot on. Conforto, Wheeler, they got to have big years. Mets going to be playing postseason baseball 2019.